Ryan, longtime sponsor of Gopher Gridiron Radio is the Burns Insurance Agency. We know that our listeners have found ways to save money. You know, when the economy is like this and there's uncertainty, any way you can save a buck or two is to your advantage.
And that's where multiple listeners of the Gopher Gridiron Radio podcast have hit up the Burns Insurance Agency in downtown Oakdale, Minnesota. And they have, I think all three of the people in the last week were able to save hundreds, if not thousands of dollars, hypothetically, by switching their insurance coverage to the Burns Insurance Agency. Now, they are located in Oakdale, Minnesota. They are licensed in North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, Michigan, New York, Florida, and Utah. So if you're a Gopher fan and you think at this time of the season you could use a little extra cash around the holidays and you got your insurance renewals coming up, check out insurancebyburns.com or email him today at bill@insurancebyburns.com.
And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys to Masochist Edition Part 2 this year. As your Golden Gopher defense, Luke Buer has been peacocking all morning and stepping around Joe Rossi's proverbial grave as Minnesota has their worst defensive performance, I would argue, since Rob Smith was fired. Just over 5 years ago now, after they gave up 600-something yards to a bad Illinois team in Champaign. Well, yesterday in West Lafayette, it wasn't much better in a 49-30 loss. But luckily for all of us listening, all of us talking, we get the dulcet tones of Dinkytown Athlete's Own, my second cousin, former Golden Gopher offensive lineman Derek Burns. Derek, I'm glad you're here to talk me through it, because after watching it live, rewatching it again this morning, it doesn't look any better through my 2010 eyes.
No, I would agree with that. It was a very long day for the Gopher defense. There's a lot to break down. Obviously, there's only one way to go, and that's up. So, but I'm glad to be back and talking with you guys. I always enjoy talking college football.
Yeah, it's always good to talk, especially I feel like I actually enjoy these hard conversations even more than the fun ones when you win a big game or something. Obviously, as a podcast, we go fairly deep. And the sentiment on Twitter last night was quite negative, obviously. But guess what, fellas? I know, Ryan, you and I happen to be in the same city, but there is a beautiful sunrise that came up this morning, and there's another day, and we will do our best to try and break this down. We're not going to be able to put that much lipstick on a pig to make you feel a lot better, but at least we can give some explanation in this 49-30 loss for the Golden Gophers. On the game, the Gophers, as we said, we're going to start with defense, fellas. As we said, they gave up 604 yards. They did not force a single turnover on the day. That is obviously kind of really impressive that actually neither team had any turnovers, that there are that many yards and that many points put up without any turnovers. But on the day, Hudson Card, 17-25, 251 yards, 10 yard average, 3 touchdowns. Probably more important though, he had 8 for 44 rushing. He was quite dynamic with his legs. He also had a rushing touchdown. But on the day, I think the thing that's really the challenge is the Purdue rushing game. 44 carries for 353 yards, 8 yard average, and 4 touchdowns. They also got numerous explosive plays in that running game. Devin Mockaby had a 65 yarder. Tyrone Tracy had a 33 yarder. Something called Dylan Downing had 24 yard a yarder. I mean, fellas, they just gashed this Gopher defense, which really, really is a surprise, but in some respects with the injuries, also not a surprise that they struggle against the running game.
I mean, the surprising part about this game to me isn't that they gave up 49 points, which is the most since COVID 2020 Michigan. Now, I know people were in my mentions last night pushing up their glasses further past their nose than it could ever possibly be, saying, well, actually, Ryan, Minnesota gave up 52 points against Michigan this year. The defense allowed 38. There were two pick sixes. Spare me all of this morning. I have no time for your petulance. But it was the running back performances, because coming into that game, boys, you'll remember Minnesota's run defense had been good since the bye week. They had allowed 168 rushing yards with running backs the last three games combined. What does Purdue do yesterday, Derek? 353 with their running backs alone. But I cannot stress to people enough, we're going to talk a lot about linebacker here, Derek, but it's not just linebacker. It starts up front to me, and that was the most disappointing defensive line performance of the entire year.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot to break down here, but I would start with the woes against the run are two main areas that I guess I would point to, and that is positioning on the field. So that's run fits, that's getting in the right spot, which was a complete breakdown, as you said, Ryan, at all three levels. And then the second thing is just awareness. Purdue runs a lot of counter, a lot of misdirection. They, of course, put in some zone read when Minnesota went man coverage. And you have to have awareness of and be able to read and recognize those plays. So I guess what I'm saying is, and I think this is the third or fourth time I've said it this year in the podcast, I'm going to die on the hill of saying that I don't believe it's an athleticism or a personnel or a talent issue on defense. I don't think it's that we're not fast enough, not strong enough, not big enough. In fact, just talking about the defensive line, I don't think anybody would argue that. Look at how they've played in previous games this year. But their inability to be in the right position, and why are they not in the right position? Because they're not reading and diagnosing the plays correctly. Mm-hmm. So that is at the core of where I think the breakdown starts. So a few examples, you know, for yesterday, you know, the line, but well, let's start with the defensive line. Again, Purdue runs his own read as soon as they see Minnesota running man coverage. The previous week, Minnesota didn't run a lot of man coverage because they didn't want the quarterback running the ball. Well, Purdue was ready for Minnesota to mix in a bunch of man coverage. They're ready for that chess match. They go to a zone read, and the defensive line, I just can't stress to you, bites so incredibly hard on the zone fake. They're running 2-3 seconds after the quarterback has kept the ball. They're still hunting down the running back. You have to have the awareness and be able to read that play. That's defensive line. Linebackers, again, I would say just being able to diagnose counter and or power and getting in the right spot is incredibly important. And then at the safety position, we'll get into that a little bit later, but still major problems with run fits.
Yeah, and ultimately what this turned into, fellas, when you can't get run fits, is just a number of explosive plays. If you look at game on paper stats, they define an explosive play when running the ball is an EPA greater than 1.8. They had four rushes over that were considered explosive plays. That is, I'm actually currently going through, I think that is the most explosive runs this Gopher defense has given up all season long. And, you know, nine explosive plays on the game for Purdue, that's really the difference in this game. Joe Rossi prides himself on not giving up explosive plays. And I think I'll say this. I really do think that his approach to defense is something I've really come around to, of not giving up explosive plays and being a staple of his defense. The reality is, it's just not been the case this year. I was critical of him early, and I'm not trying to stomp on his grave, as Ryan joked earlier. I think he's done incredible things. And this season, they've just not been able to get rid of those explosive plays, and that's been their Achilles heel. And this game is just more evidence of that. It's been a struggle. And Derek, I agree with you. I don't think it's necessarily talent, except for if you want to make an excuse at linebacker where they're very thin, that's a totally different conversation. That's probably more recruiting related that Ryan could get to. But ultimately, the explosive plays are what's doing this defense in, Ryan.
They are. And so how does Minnesota get to where they are at linebacker yesterday? Well, I talked about it on Gopher Football Sunday with Justin Gard this morning. I'll go through it again for you, the listener. And I can't stress to you enough, this is not NIL related. Everybody loves to point fingers at NIL. This is not NIL related. So last year, He had Mariano Soria Marion, Cody Lindenberg, Braylon Oliver, and Donald Willis play a lot of snaps for you. Mariano graduates. He's now an intern with the staff. He's literally in the booth with Rossi on Saturdays. Cody Lindenberg, you've seen when he's been healthy, just played the best game of his life last week against Illinois, and then he misses this game, his eighth game that he's missed of 10 this season, and it's just it's killing them back there. Well, also, Donald Willis transfers to Western Michigan. Also, Raylan Oliver goes to Georgia Tech. Neither of those guys, according to Pro Football Focus, because I haven't had the time to watch the Western Michigan Broncos on Maction or Georgia Tech, they haven't played well this season for their respective universities. And why did they end up transferring? Because they wanted larger roles. I cannot stress to you, that was stressed to me from them, from the coaches, from whoever you talk to. It's not NIL related. It was Donald Willis wanting a bigger role, and he was going to be a Sam linebacker here. He said, I want to be a Mike or a Will. Minnesota was honest about his role. He goes to Western Michigan. Braylon Oliver, Minnesota was honest about his role. Ends up going to Georgia Tech. So then you're sitting here thinking, how do we get to where we are where Matt Kingsbury's out there yesterday, six plays into the game? It's because Western Michigan transfer that they did bring in at linebacker, Ryan Selig, just hasn't been good enough. He's been banged up, and that doesn't help because anytime you play banged up, you're not going to be playing as well as you can, but it's been all season where it hasn't been consistent for him. But just Lindenberg being out changes that room so much. And it sucks that Maverick Baranowski on the game's fifth play gets banged up, doesn't return, and then you're forced to make the question, who do I throw out there? And I think it's just perfectly encapsulates. They decided that Matt Kingsbury, who I've heard great things about behind the scenes, and I think he's got a bright future here, a true freshman from St. Rita's in Chicago, is thrown out there instead of Ryan Selig. Now, we can argue semantics about Mike versus Will versus Sam versus who knows their responsibilities. But the reality is, what does Purdue do then once they see 49 come into the game, Derek? They went after him, which is exactly what they should do. But that's how you get to where you are, is when you're without Lindenberg, you're without Maverick Baranowski, and you've got Devin Williams, who played okay, I would say. But you're missing run fits. You're getting, you know, misdirectioned in pass coverage, and you're giving up explosive plays. It just happened far too often for this linebacking corps yesterday.
Yeah, and you know the other reality is at times, you know, maybe the defensive line will do a good job, but the reality is to be able to make the play, you need all three levels to kind of be in harmony, or at least two levels. And too often, even when there might be a jaw joiner crashes down on a counter and is able to kind of fill the gap, the linebacker, or close the gap, the linebacker isn't there to make the tackle, and then now you have an explosive play. The reality
that's,
is,
I want you to stick on that point because I think that's also important to note here. Is I think linebacker play was already in a tough spot yesterday, Luke, but because the defensive line just didn't play well, that was the most amount of times I have seen an offensive line against this Minnesota defense this year easily get to the second level with hands on. And that doesn't help any linebacker, whether it's Cody Lindenberg and Kamal Martin out there, say. But especially it's really put under the microscope when you're throwing out inexperienced players. So yeah, that is an important note that I want to make sure we stress here, is I think linebacker looked a lot worse yesterday because of how poor the defensive line did in their job too.
Yeah. And that's, I think, a really good point. I wasn't going to get there, but what I was going to get to, Ryan, is like, so much of football success is incumbent on the fact that the team has to be working harmoniously together to have success. We talk about that a lot in the passing game, right? Like the number of times we've talked about, you have to have a pre-snap read, you have to be able to block, you have to be able to make a throw, you got to be able to catch. The same is true of a run fit. And I think that's been, to Derek, to your broader point, has been probably their Achilles heel this year. Typically more often in zone coverage and defense, but on Saturday, it was so much in the running game.
Yeah, and so Purdue obviously runs a spread offense. We got to see that at the highest level on Saturday. And what that means is that you have to cover space, both run and pass. You have to make tackles in space. And the lack of execution on that is usually, if you fail against a team that's running spread, it's usually because of one of two things. Either you do not have the athletes to cover that amount of space or be athletic enough to make tackles in space, or you're out of position. It's usually one or the other. And again, I'll just say one more time, I don't think that it's that they don't have the athletes. I think it's that they're out of position. And it's a credit to Purdue in those concepts that you have to defend the whole field. And to your point, Luke, about the different levels working, I mean, there were times when things were okay on the defense. I'm thinking, you know, the first quarter, one of the chunk running plays, defensive line plays it well. Play side linebacker gets you know, basically takes on a block. He's a block eater. The backside linebacker, it's his job to make the tackle in the hole against counter. He gets there. He's in the right spot. He doesn't make the tackle. Well, against a spread team, that missed tackle is going to result in a 15-yard run. So on that particular play, it happened to be execution. But most of the time, when you miss an open tackle like that, it's because you're not in the correct position. So that's why it's critically important against a spread team, different formations, different personnel, running the same running plays out of different formation and personnel. You have to get your post-snap reads, and you've got to be in the right spot as quick as possible.
Yeah, the other thing that I want to highlight too is to the spread concept. The spread is good, is really often very effective when there's lots of field behind your defense, because you have to cover so much field, which you alluded to, Derek. But also, you could see this even in the Gopher game. Once they get into the red zone, it gets a lot harder. And you saw even that almost goal line stand where Hudson Card ends up running in. You know, it gets so much harder for them to run because they can't really spread you out that much. The defense doesn't have to cover as much ground. But then the other reality that was hard yesterday is those explosive plays were often turning into touchdowns, right? So the first touchdown was a 20-yard pass from Hudson Card to Garrett Miller, then TJ Sheffield, the 24-yard pass, right? You know, ultimately they eventually were able to find success even running the ball in the red zone too. But that's the thing that was really challenging, is you were giving up long plays. It also resulted into touchdowns against the spread. And ultimately, you know, that's what kind of did the Gophers in, is a combination of those explosive plays and not being able to, in large part, giving up early down success too, Ryan. They often had third and very manageable, where now it's a run pass option. And then, you know, we have to transition to the pass game, where they really struggled as well.
If you're going to attack Minnesota in one place through the year this season, we all know where it is, and it's going to be right between the hashes. I mean, to me, the number one thing that Fleck has to do in the transfer portal when it opens here in about a month is they got to go out and find the best possible slot corner coverage guy that they can, because it's clear that they don't trust Jack Henderson to do that, Craig McDonald to do that. Tyler Bride hasn't been what they hoped, and they're just getting obliterated in the middle of the field. I think back to the final touchdown against Northwestern at regulation, right up the middle of the field. Yesterday, the first touchdown of the game, Purdue gets a little tight end delay. The linebacker's eyes get in the wrong spot. The safety sees the tight end stay in, so he gets into his zone. They come back to it. He's wide open across the middle, touchdown. Second scoring possession for them. They hit the running back for, 52 yards, I think it was. And all he did was literally run straight, Luke. I kid you not, it was play action, but he never stopped running straight.
It was a really great play, actually.
Linebacker, and because the safeties were in coverage themselves out of the middle of the field, 52-yard completion, touchdown results. You know, I feel for Darius Green, because he's in the right spot to make one of those plays, and it's just a great throw and a better catch. But then he gets literally run through for a touchdown, to which Luke Buehr then hits the group chat and says, "Haha, Joe Rossi." But he
did not do that, but okay.
Where you sent a screenshot of a tweet where it looks like that on that touchdown, where I believe, I don't forget who it was, might have been Deion Burks.
I think it was number four, yeah. And he looked like he was fielding a punt, but he was actually catching a pass.
Yeah, it looked like he was about to get a fair catch on a punt. Nope, that's just him 15 yards behind both members of the Gopher secondary crew. It's just, it has been a time this year trying to cover anyone in the center of the field. And then here's the thing. The only answer I have to you is they pulled Darius Green yesterday and they slid Tyler Newbin, as I'm sure Derek will tell you, to strong safety, which is the first time he's played that in a game. I don't know, Derek, 2019. But yeah,
probably.
Then you saw Bryson Coleman get in there. Everybody had been clamoring for him, and too many missed run fits, too many missed tackles, not enough plays. It's just they are struggling immensely in coverage, Derek, specifically over the center part of the field.
Yeah, it's in a 12-game season for Power 5 Big Ten football, if you have a weakness, it's going to be exposed. And I think about the fact, why is this getting worse? We're in November. You weren't seeing, the last two games in particular look a lot worse. Why is that? Well, part of it, yes, is injuries, and you have some younger guys playing. That's part of it, and that's what Fleck keeps talking about, and he's not wrong. But the other part of it is I think zone pass coverage has been a problem all year, but that now it's well scouted and documented. So what are teams going to do? They're going to torture test you on zone pass coverage. In the times that Minnesota ran man coverage, usually with a pressure, things looked pretty good. Now, Hudson Card's ability, and he's coached to extend plays, and there were times that he looked like the ghost of Fran Tarkington. That's a credit to him.
Yeah.
But teams are going to, it's going to happen next week. It's going to happen against Wisconsin. They are going to torture test Minnesota on zone pass coverage until they get it corrected. This is what big time football is all about. So I think it's been an issue all year, but you're right, Ryan, in that the middle of the field is going to be attacked until they get it figured out. I'll take this opportunity to transition into, well, what do they do? How do you fix this? Well, we can go back and talk about the running game if you want, but in the passing game, I don't think maybe Joe Rossi or the team isn't going to like the suggestion. I think they need to be a lot less risk averse with their safeties. I think that's become a huge issue in pass coverage. If you think back to, and Luke, you talked about it just a few minutes ago, Joe Rossi's defenses, when they are at their best, they're boring and they're pretty risk averse, but they're incredibly fundamentally sound. What does that mean? If you're playing with two high safeties, they stay back. They take anything that goes deep. They keep everything in front of them. They don't give up passing touchdowns, but they also aren't jumping routes and trying to get interceptions, which I'm not saying that's wrong, but there's a give and take there. It's a risk and reward there. And I think one of the changes I've seen with this defense this year is a lot higher risk reward strategy,
yeah,
particularly with the safeties. Now, I'm not going to talk out of both sides of my mouth. I have asked for that in previous years on the podcast, and I'm here to tell you I was wrong. I mean, we're seeing the results this year. I don't think they have the personnel, the experience specifically, to be able to play that way. So if I'm the coaching staff and I'm going through correction and talking about how do we get this fixed moving forward, in pass coverage in particular, I'm going back to boring.
Mm-hmm.
I'm keeping two safeties back. Okay, and running down in distances, you can go single high, but you're keeping your safeties deep. You're keeping everything in front of you. If they're going to dink and dunk you for 8 or 9 yard passes, let them do that. Let them put together 10, 12 play drives rather than trying to get in front of a receiver and giving up a 65-yard touchdown.
Yeah, and I think to your point, this has gotten them in trouble in previous games as well, right? You could even think to the Illinois game most recently where Newbin makes a great interception and then ends up getting beat deep basically to lose the game, right? I agree that I've clamored for this as well, and I'll fall on my sword as well and say, like, it's obviously not working. Why? Probably because of the personnel, and it's not just like Tyler Newbin's not good enough. It's more I think everything else probably isn't
correct.
Quite good enough, right? I don't want to single out Tyler Newbin in that situation and say, you're not good enough, Tyler, because the reality is you probably are. It's just everything else and probably more the corners.
If you're going to be high risk reward, you have to be really good at sniffing out routes.
Yeah.
So if you're going to try and jump routes and be a more turnover based defense, you have to be incredibly good at reading, identifying routes, and that's actually what they're not good at. I mean, that's where they've been struggling, which is kind of what we're talking about, is post-snap read and diagnosis. So, again, what does that mean? Well, that means, I'm not here to say they're just flat out guessing on every play. That would be an overstatement. But I would just go back to a more fundamentally sound, boring defense and just force the passing the ball, force the team to put together 10 good passes to try and score a touchdown versus trying to get a turnover and letting out one or two chunk passing plays for a touchdown. I think you've got to go back to that strategy.
I don't know that I have much more to add other than it's not going to look great when Marvin Harrison and Emeka Buka and everything that Ohio State encapsulates on offense goes against this Gopher defense this upcoming weekend. But it's how do you get confident enough or make whatever changes you're going to make, I would test at least some of them out next weekend in Columbus before you take on Wisconsin, because we'll talk about it at the end. They've lost four of their last five now. I mean, this is going to be a very important game like it always is for the Axe. You're trying to win the Axe for the first time three consecutive years since the mid-80s. But it's also potentially going to be for bowl eligibility at this point because Wisconsin's also 5-5. And imagine that fan base who's told for the fourth consecutive season, they are the preseason Big Ten West favorites. They had an 8.5 win total, and they're sitting here at 5-5. So whatever defensive changes Rossi's going to make here in the next two games, I think it depends on he knows more than we do in terms of what is Cody Lindenberg's status. Because if he's not back, then, yeah, you're going to have to kind of adapt what Tyler Newbin does and do it for the betterment of the defense. But so much of it comes around the health of 45 to me.
Ryan, if you're looking for a way to get involved and make an impact in Gopher sports, one way to do that is to give an NIL. And one way to do that without giving any money is to work with TeamDinkytown.com. If you're buying or selling a home, Team Dinkytown Real Estate Group is going to give 1% of the purchase price to Dinkytown athletes, to the team of your choice. That could be football. It could be volleyball. It could be softball. It doesn't matter. You get to pick. You could even pick all sports. And the reality is, Ryan, is that's no small sum of money that can be given to Dinkytown athletes to help support our Gopher athletes.
So you can sell your house for over asking. Plus, you can make a sizable impact to the program of Gopher athletics of your choice. Seems like a heck of a deal to me. So go to TeamDinkytown.com, check them out today. Or if you want to give them a call, 612-250-8562.
I also want to note that Team Dinkytown recently got a client right from our listenership, and they want to give back to our listeners. They've got two tickets to the game against Missouri, the men's basketball game against Missouri. So they are great seats behind, right behind the Gophers bench. So if you're interested and you want to go and you want to get a free ticket, go to TeamDinkytown.com. Scroll down the page a bit, find ready to get started. Fill in your name and information, and from those that submit, they will be picking one winner for two tickets for the Missouri and Minnesota basketball game. It's going to be a really good test for Ben Johnson's squad. Again, TeamDinkytown.com. Ryan, that was a really tough game to watch against Purdue. But you know what? I had my brother-in-law over to watch the second half, and he got a text from one of our listeners thanking us for the recommendation of Comply Foam memory foam ear tips. And I'm going to tell you, Ryan, my brother-in-law literally bought the memory foam ear tips after I showed them to him in person. He bought them right there at my house and said, this might be what I need.
I cannot stress to you, we have tried for months, but I'll do it one last time here. If you have earbuds that you have invested in, AirPods, Beats Pros, whatever they may be, you've got the silicone tips on and you're doing it wrong. They're hurting your ear. You know it. You're constantly adjusting, especially when you're moving around. Go to complyfoam.com. They are a local Minnesota company. You get these memory foam tips that eliminate ear pain, fatigue, allow you to listen longer. They actually stay inside your ear. You're not constantly fumbling around with it. And the beautiful part is, Luke, as your brother-in-law found out, you go to checkout, 20% off your order with promo code GG23. So if you're looking for a gift for, say, a younger, someone, a millennial, one of your kids, you know that they always got those AirPods in their ears. If you want to be the cool mom or dad, get them some Comply Foam memory foam tips today. Go to complyfoam.com. Figure out what they have. They have so many different brands. Find the one that is the one that you have. And when you get to checkout, 20% off your first order with promo code GG23.
Okay, let's take a look at when the Gophers were on offense on the day they were able to amass 30 total points. And one might think, hey, this is a Big Ten West game. You should be able to win with 30 points. Not the case on this day. Ethan Kaliak-Manis on the day, 18 of 42, 292 yards, three touchdowns. And we should mention, too, that that Daniel Jackson continues his really strong play with seven receptions, 119 yards. He also had a long of 35. Chris Ottman-Bell flashed, and then he also had a couple struggles as well. He had two catches for 66 yards and a touchdown and a really miraculous grab. And then Brevin Spanford continues to improve his play as the season has gone forward. Five catches, 59 yards, and a touchdown and a really nice design play for the first touchdown of the game. All in all, they spread the ball around better than they have in the past. Elijah Spencer, all he does is catch touchdowns, catches another one. Running the ball again, first half was some good, definitely had some success. In the second half, definitely again struggled. So the reality of this, guys, is I think this Gopher offense has looked better. We can get into like why have they struggled in the second halves. Probably that's something we need to look at. I know that we've talked about that in our group chat for the last few weeks. Like, why is Ethan's completion percentage just really drop off in the second half? But ultimately, this Gopher offense, especially in the first half, looked good. But this is the kind of game, Derek, to your point, where you know, you have to be able to convert almost everything. And the reality is they missed and dropped some balls and weren't able to execute a couple times. And ultimately they couldn't hang and put up, you know, 51 points like they maybe would have needed.
Yeah, I think that offense to me in this game came down to scheme. I think that's where you saw the differences in the first and second half. Purdue likes to be a press man coverage, single high safety defense. And for the second week in a row, I think Ethan looked a lot more comfortable against man coverage. I think that was the case against Illinois. I think that was the case against Purdue, which that's what they predominantly ran in the first half. And we found a lot of success. We found our own explosive plays of passing the ball. I would also say running the ball against man coverage looked pretty good. I thought the offensive line looked solid in the first half. You know, the benefit you have facing man coverage is you can take two or three receivers and run defenders out of the box in man coverage. So that gives you a better numbers in the box. And Minnesota was ready for that. And I think really was chugging along other than, you know, too many times we're able to ended up getting a field goal instead of a touchdown. But for the most part, I thought it looked pretty good. Now, in the second half, Purdue shifted to more zone coverage, and that's when things stalled out. Ethan has not looked as comfortable reading and diagnosing zone coverage, fitting, you know, footballs into tight windows. Zone coverage, zone also gives you better run defense. So I think those were the changes in the second half, and part of the reason why Minnesota wasn't able to have as much success. And the other part is game script. You know, when you get down two to three scores, you become one dimensional and the defense is able to game plan against that. So I think, in my opinion, that was the difference to me first half to second half, just from a high level view.
I think it comes down to the running game, where Minnesota's now for the second consecutive game in the second half run for only 32 yards. Last week against Illinois, it was 18 carries for 32 yards. Turns out when you're averaging about a yard and a half per rush in this Minnesota offense, the way Fleck wants it to be, that's not going to get it done. In the second half against Purdue yesterday, 10 carries for 32 yards. That's not going to get it done. And that's why the offense continues to struggle in the second half to me, is if you run the ball 28 times for 64 yards in the second half, that isn't going to do anything. I mean, as much as it is about Ethan, and I'm not saying he should be excluded from criticism, to to the points that you both have made, Ansi Atin continues to come back in the second half. He's airing on some throws. It just looks sped up. But I even come back to within this specific game, think about how that second half might have changed if Chris Ottman-Bell just catches one right over the middle, where it literally hit him in between the hands and he never saw the ball, which I watched that back, Luke. I know that the referee was there and you could say he got screened. I'm convinced from watching that back, he just never got his head around. And I don't know how you don't get your head around as a seventh-year senior receiver. And if that is completed, we've talked about, and so do the offensive coordinators for any team, to get your quarterback going, let's get quick, simple, easy completions. That is a quick, simple, easy completion, and they just continue to drop passes to an extent. It's just, I don't think it's one thing in the second half of games anymore. Yeah. I think it's everything. I think their inefficiency in the run game plays a part. I think teams start to dial up more pressure on Atin in the second half, and then antsy Atin comes out, jittery Atin comes out. And then when receivers have needed to make key plays in the second half of games, they haven't made them. I think it's just a culmination of everything, which is not a fun answer, Luke.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. You know, when I look back at Ethan's stats and you see that, you know, the completion percentage in particular just drops quarter by quarter, you know, I always kind of attribute that to like, well, it's probably something to do with the philosophy of the offense in terms of being kind of risk averse, because you're then put into situations you're predominantly looking at like, oh, well, you're playing from behind and when you're throwing, and then that becomes harder. But the reality is, Ryan, I think to your point, at least in these last two games, the completion percentage doesn't look good, right? The 18 of 42. But the reality, at least yesterday, do you have a pass percentage adjusted for drops? Because like Chris Ottman-Bell had two for sure, right? He had the one.
PFF credited Gopher receivers yesterday with four drops. Yeah. I'd argue there were five or six, but his adjusted completion percentage yesterday would have been 52%, which, look, I'm not here to tell you that's great.
No.
But where I continue to see progress from him is I always like to reference, there's one stat that from Pro Football Focus, when you look at quarterbacks, it's called big time throws. And it's those throws usually higher down the field that result in explosive plays. And I wrote, when you looked at Ethan's first 12 starts of his career, the last six games of 2022, the first six games of 2023 before the bye week, he only had seven of those type of throws. Now in the four games since the bye week, anybody want to guess how many big-time throws Atin Kaliak-Manis has completed?
Oh, he's got to have five, maybe? Six?
I would tell you that Pro Football Focus credits him with 13.
Wow.
Including five yesterday, which is the highest mark he's had at any point in his career. And that's where, Derek, we had talked about for a long time on this podcast, whether it was Jerry Kill, PJ Fleck, we wanted to see downfield throws. Well, how's this for a stat? 41 pass attempts yesterday for Atin Kaliak-Manis, an average depth of target on 41 passing attempts of 14 and a half yards, Derek. 14 and a half.
It's hard to, and I think sometimes people don't want to hear about positives coming out of a game like that because they believe, well, what positives are there? There were some positives. For me, personally, the number one positive I take out of the game on Saturday was Minnesota's willingness to throw 50-50 balls against single man coverage. Yeah. This is something that we've been clamoring for since Jerry Kill was a football coach. Since
Drew Wolitarski was back there, probably.
Yes, that's probably accurate. Where very simply, it's one of the most conventional concepts in football, throwing the ball, particularly when you get man against a man coverage team. If you can find single man coverage down the field, throw a 50-50 ball, because more often than not, you're going to get either a pass interference, a miraculous catch, or a pass breakup, but it's usually not going to be picked off. So what's the risk? And boy, again, on Saturday, I was very pleased to see them over and over and over again just chuck the ball downfield against single man coverage. Why not? And they came up with some great Great passes, great catches. Daniel Jackson, at least two of them, absolutely torched, by the way, on a double move, the cornerback in the first half. But a couple great throws there. Chris Ottman Bell touchdown. I mean, that's, in my mind, that's what I'm clamoring for. Keep doing that. If you get man coverage, and you're going to see a lot more of that if they can run the ball better. But if you can, why not? Why not throw that in a game that's tighter, in a one-score game in the second half where we always complain about turtle mode? Why don't we go play action, drop back, find single coverage, and chuck the ball down the field? It would be great to see that.
And it was finally – I mean, to me, it was great to see Ottman Bell get a touchdown, but I'm also not here to tell you the two most negative plays for the Minnesota offense around the day was that first third down of the second half where Ottman Bell drops it, and then he drops – a touchdown in the second quarter where, yeah, it's a difficult play, but it's one that your seventh year senior receiver has to make.
We've seen him make that play too, by the
and
way.
It's in the years second past. Consecutive week a senior receiver has dropped a touchdown where it should be a touchdown. Like, are they easy catches? No. Are they incredibly difficult catches? No. But think about how maybe that game flips on its head if Chris Ottman Bell comes down with that pass. And at halftime, it's 28-27 instead of 28-20, because not only does it compound upon itself where Ottman Bell drops the touchdown, Dragan Kesic then misses the field goal. So instead of 7 points, you have zero. And how much does that game potentially differ if it's 28-27 and then Ottman Bell catches that third down slant across the middle and Minnesota actually gets a little momentum or confidence with their quarterback? So it's unfortunate that it continues to go that way for this receiving core, where Daniel Jackson has surpassed any and all expectations I had for him coming into the year. And I think both of you know I was banging that drum incredibly, incredibly hard. But he's going to find himself on an all Big Ten team, which, Luke, I don't remember which of the three of us had him in the draft, but I feel very confident that he's going to be.
I had him like 2 years ago, so I regret not sticking with that. I don't think I ended up with him. We'll have to see.
But we even saw Brevin Spanford. Again, I thought that play design on the first touchdown was beautiful. You have everything moving right to left, little tight end wide delay. As a former college football tight end myself, be still my beating heart as he comes back left to right, wide open for a touchdown. We've spent so much time over the years on this show lambasting and lamenting the Gopher offense. I'm tired of talking about the Gopher offense and losses like this, because they've now lost games in the Big Ten West where they've scored 26, 30, and 34 points. And I'm sorry, you should win games like that, especially in this current state of the Big Ten West offenses. But the reality is it wasn't enough. The reality is it should have been 37. They missed some opportunities, as Derek noted, to be more efficient as they got into the red and green zone. But I will say this to you. If you can't see the progress that this offense is making, specifically with the quarterback, you're just choosing to be negative on him. Because now, since the bye week, he's got 7 passing touchdowns and only two turnovers. Hasn't had any turnovers in the last two games. Mm-hmm. And you're seeing Brevin Spanford play better. You're seeing Daniel Jackson continue to play well. The thing I would touch on is, imagine what this offense would look like if they're not having Jordan Newbin get 18 carries a game. And that is not meant as a shot at arguably the best story on this football team.
Right.
But he's RB5 for a reason. Mm-hmm. Like, he gets 18 carries on the day, 18 or 16 carries, only 2 missed tackles forced. I'm not here to tell you that Zach Evans was much better before he went down and didn't return after he was already banged up. Doesn't return after a carry in the second quarter. He doesn't force any missed tackles as well. I don't want this to come off as, wow, Ryan hates Jordan Newbin. I don't hate Jordan Newbin. And Jordan Newbin does really well in outside zone, and he was efficient on the day. I think he ran for over 5 yards a carry. It's just there are holes right now in the run game, Derek, where I think to myself, if Rodney Smith, Shannon Brooks, Mo Ibrahim, or even Darius Taylor were out there, Minnesota's run game, imagine what this offense could be if they could break more first tackles. Mm-hmm. To me, that stood out the last couple of weeks, is if Minnesota's running back can just make one guy miss, it's going to be an explosive, and it's a struggle for them to do that right now.
Yeah, that's the job of the running back. They have to make one defender miss or break that tackle, and then they've done their job. And in many cases, at least in the first half on Saturday, that defender was a secondary player.
Yes.
So you're right, and that if they were able to break that tackle, I actually thought the run blocking out of the tackles and Brevin Spann-Ford was pretty good. I think that was Brevin Spann-Ford's best run blocking game. I know he picked up
Focus agrees with Derek Burns. Shocker. Water is also wet. News.
Well, he did pick up the block below the waist. I mean, that was a play hard penalty. You're going to pick up some of those, but I think that was his best pass blocking game. I thought the tackles looked pretty good on the outside, but I would agree with you, Ryan. What you're asked at running back is that they have to beat one defender themselves. And too often, I don't think that was the case. And some of those 6, 7, 8 yard gains could have been, 20 plus had they done that. So that's something they need to, more experience, need to work on it, get healthy, all of those things.
Hey, Derek, can we go back to that penalty on Brevin? So like me, having never played offensive line, I look at that play and I'm like, that was really close. Like, where are we looking at in terms of, the letter of the law, spirit of the law? Because it looked like he was right on his hip. So I just don't understand that personally. And I'm not trying to say that it was a bad call. I'm just trying to understand as a novice, never having played the position.
Yeah, so the block below the waist coming back against the grain is that's the rule. And I understand what you're saying, that it's right at the waist. So from a technical standpoint, you could say, oh, it's a little bit borderline. I thought it was a good call. And here's the spirit of the rule is injury prevention. There's a high likelihood that you can blow out guys' knees coming back and blocking below the waist when his back is turned or his side is turned. And that play in particular, I don't think there was a big risk of it, but that's the spirit of the, I was fine with the call. I guess that's what I'm trying to tell you. And because the reason they call that is again, trying to keep injuries down on the defenders.
Sure. And like I said, I didn't really know. I'm just curious because you have obviously good insight on that. I understand the intent of the rule. Just I didn't know if it was enforced correctly, and I wasn't going to complain. One thing I do want to highlight, guys, and Ryan, you've pointed out the fact that the Gophers have now lost games, where they output a good number of points, those being Purdue, Illinois, and Northwestern, right? If you actually look at the advanced stats, those from an offensive perspective are their three best advanced stats games. Both like EPA per play, like success rate, even EPA per dropback. Those are some of their best games, but ultimately the defense does them in. So to your point, Ryan, I think people want to talk about offense, especially because they always want to point the issue at the quarterback. And I'm not saying the quarterback's been perfect, but in this situation, like, I think they've done enough where you got to be able to win, and ultimately it comes back to, like, you just have to be able to stop some people. Or the alternative, to Derek's point, is you have to find ways to win these kind of high scoring games, and maybe you do have to do it with your offense in some way. I'm just not sure that PJ can win a game, 51 to 49.
Yeah, like say a Illinois team did against a Indiana team yesterday. Maybe you adapt on a game by game basis. But I do think, like, the only head-scratching thing I would say from Fleck yesterday that I didn't agree with, and I know you think you specifically don't agree with my take on it, is Fleck punting on 4th-and-2 at the end of the first half at his own 48 when your defense literally hadn't – I think they had given up touchdown drives on 5 consecutive drives.
Yeah.
Why are you punting on 4th-and-2 at midfield? Because you can't tell me, well, we wanted to pin him deep, not give him a chance to score, we're going to get a stop, then we got the ball to start the second half. One, you didn't get the ball to start the second half. Two, you hadn't stopped anything all day. I hated punting that, but it's like that play specifically is so meaningless in a game like this. But what did you think?
So, yeah, I mean, this is where I don't necessarily disagree with the take. So let's look at the situation. So it's 28-13, right? Minnesota, I'm trying to figure out what yard line they are on. But ultimately they have to punt. They're on their 43, right? And you've got 4th-and-7. So what time was it really? So it ended up being 2:06, right? And ultimately, you have to be able to, I think, in that situation, say, well, we haven't been able to stop them. If we don't get this, they're now on the, like, 43? Yes. Sorry. I'm bad at this. Okay, yes. It was the 43. Now they only have to go, 57 yards, right? And their offense has been great. But if you pin them deep in that situation, they have to protect now, or they have to call plays in a totally different manner. It ultimately worked in their favor. I understand. I can probably get on both sides of the rationale, so I'm speaking out of both sides of my mouth here. But I didn't hate that from the standpoint of, my defense hasn't been great. I don't know if I want to give them only 57 yards. Let's try and make them go 90. It ended up working in their favor. They use their timeouts well in that situation. They're able to get a touchdown, something I never thought would happen. But that's kind of where I come from in that situation, is make them go as far as they possibly can, knowing your defense has not been great thus far. They're going to have to call it differently from inside the red zone or inside their 10, because they, in the same respect, they don't want to give it back on a short field, which they did, and ultimately, worked out in the Gophers' advantage.
Derek, any thoughts?
Yeah, I'll probably get some heat for this, but I was just fine with the punt, because I looked at it as, if you don't get it, it's a guaranteed score. Whereas exactly. If you punt it, even though the defense had been playing awful, still the likelihood of Purdue going 80 yards versus 40 yards, well, even into scoring position, let's call it 60, 65 yards versus 10 yards to get into scoring position, it's just, you're making it a little bit harder, especially with 2 minutes left. So I was fine with it. I could understand if they had gone for it. I mean, the best thing, of course, is you go for it, you keep the ball, you don't give them the opportunity. But I was okay with the call.
Otherwise, let's talk just a little bit of special teams maybe before we wrap up here.
Did you see the three best kick returns of the year because they were kicked out of bounds?
I was going to say, like, when's the last time you guys saw three kicks out of bounds? Three free kicks out of bounds, probably. Right? Like, that was bad. And it ultimately meant nothing in the game, right? Just in terms of the outcome. But it did help the Gophers. The one thing that I did think, Ryan, after that was, you talk a lot about how much the Gophers give up in yardage on kickoffs. And then you see, oh, well, they don't give up yardage. They actually gain yardage. And look at how much more effective the offense is. You look at that opening drive, you're like, golly, they start on the 40, and it's only, what, four plays? You had a touchdown? You know, the script works when you get those extra yards, I guess.
Yeah, imagine what it would be like if Minnesota actually got that on a consistent basis. Novel theory. I don't know. What is it? Dragan Kesich, 3 of 4 from a college kicker. You'll take every day of the week.
I'll take that. I will say, though, that the miss was not great. Like, to me, that was a really tough miss. I don't know. I think he just mishit that one in general. That, or it was a bad hold, because it really curved. He usually is pretty true. So it was a mishit. But yes, he is overwhelmingly the positive on the special teams.
Mark Crawford had like a 40 net average. Okay.
Situationally did well too, right? We got to point that out. Like the one there that, you're complaining about that they did punt, he did end up with a pretty good punt there.
Look at Minnesota's punt team actually executing. Just, you have two opportunities to return a kick, and I still don't know what happened, because I wasn't live for the first time this year, where Jameson Gears just hops on the football and Minnesota starts to drive it like they're 15 again, because kickoff return is incapable of anything. But then you have the Q Redding one where after Jalen Logan Redding gets suplexed on the PAT, Purdue starts back, and then I think Minnesota Quentin Redding returned it to like the 40 or something. It's just,
did you guys notice though that like both teams, I think on that one that probably where Jalen Logan Redding, I guess I didn't watch it back super close on my rewatch, but he had to have jumped, right? Like, and that should have been a penalty, I would think, on him. And then conversely, Purdue definitely tried to jump the line a couple times, and it was uncalled. Like, they were not consistent with that. At least consistent with the enforcement of that. Or did I rewatch the Jalen Logan Redding thing like completely wrong?
He probably jumped, and then he probably had an offensive lineman. I think it was two guys right there continued to hold him up, and then one just suplexed him.
Yeah.
So
that should be a penalty too, just for the record. Like, you can't do that. But I think there could have been a penalty on Jalen as well for potentially jumping. I just didn't see.
So hear me out with this novel idea. Imagine if you actually had a coach for the rush ends, or had a coach for the linebackers, where Rossi could just focus on scheme and defensive game plan, or your rush ends coach, who has the rush ends coach title, actually works with the rush ends instead of having this weird title, but never works with them at any point in his life. Imagine that 10th assistant coach spot actually going to good use.
Yeah.
When you give up 600 yards and you give up 49 points and you have yet another emotional, devastating, polarizing type of loss, imagine actually allocating the little resources that you do have in terms of assistant salary pool efficiently.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue with you on that one. Okay, other things maybe before we get to Big Ten stuff. That looks like a really good crowd at Purdue. Like, I know they reported it being a sellout, but have they had really good attendance all year? Like, I was real impressed.
Especially after they hadn't won a game since, I think, September.
Yeah.
Or was it early October? Either way. Yeah. I mean, here's what I want to ask you guys before we kind of get into our Big Ten stuff. And Luke, you brought it up because I believe Greek mentioned it on the Eyes on Big Ten podcast. It has been there has been very little middle ground for emotional swings this season, hasn't there?
Oh, no doubt. Like, it's been a roller coaster. Yes, you're right. Greek did bring this up, and it's a really good narrative for the Minnesota season. Like, incredible high against Northwestern to open, and then you have an incredible low against North Carolina. I mean, the swings have been massive, and part of this, I think, gets to what Fleck has talked about, is they lack consistency, right? And whether or not he talks about that being the young players that they have and the inexperience that they have, but yes, they have not been consistent, and as a result, you've had huge emotional highs and lows.
You beat Iowa, beat Michigan State, lose to Illinois in the last second, get obliterated by Purdue. And it's like, Derek, I go into these final two games of the year, and Ohio State, it is what it is, and we'll talk about that later this week. But I don't know what to expect from either team in 2 weeks when Minnesota takes on Wisconsin. Both teams are banged up. Both teams haven't had the season that they wanted. I'd argue Wisconsin especially with some of the comments that their coaching staff and players made after the game yesterday. That's the thing I'm going to remember too about this season, other than the defense imploding, is Fleck loves to talk about complementary football. We've heard that for years. We've talked about it this year because Fleck mentions it to me every Monday or Saturday after a game. I just don't think this 2023 team is capable of playing a complete game because they can't be consistent at any point. And what is your theory as to why the consistency, other than maybe you chalk it up to inexperience, which that certainly would probably be the number one topic, but why is this 2023 team so incapable of finding consistency like we've seen other Fleck teams have?
That's a really good question. I think the easiest answer, and I only think it's part of the answer, is some of the inexperience that I know people hate. And they've just grown to hate PJ bringing that up. And I understand why people hate that, because they're saying, well, it's year seven. Isn't that a reflection on, recruiting or the coach? Yes, it is. But it's also the reality where if you're thin at some areas or inexperienced, that's what's going to show up. I think that, in today's day and age, okay, talk about the offensive side of the ball for a moment. We talked about before the season that we were going to make a fundamental shift in approach. That's not easy to do. Look at what's happening at Wisconsin. And
yep.
I think that we maybe attempted, or that those were our intentions, but because the execution in the passing game hasn't been what the coaches wanted it to be, we sort of went back to, okay, well, we're just going to run the ball. Well, then the injuries piled up in the running back room. So it's, I think on offense, it's a little bit of an identity crisis, which is what's keeping them from being consistent. We can't, at least in years past, when it was, we're going to run the ball on first down, we're going to run the ball on second down, and then if we're in third and 10 plus, we're still going to run the ball. At least that was our identity, and that's what we relied on, which was, if nothing else, consistent. Defensive side of the ball, I think I already talked about it, but I would echo it again. I think we also have shifted identity there. Whether that was intentional or not, I don't know. But I think we've gone from a let them get yards, but we're not going to let them score. We're going to keep everything in front of us. We're going to be fundamentally sound. We're going to have the right guy in the right gap on every single play. That's not what's happened this year. I think we've taken a higher risk reward strategy. We have an experience on defense. So I think on the defensive side of the ball, I think that plays into it as well. So maybe just a shift in, and we'll see where this goes. I mean, it's interesting. This isn't what you asked, Ryan, but I would just make this comment as well. As a fan base, when you have a program like Minnesota that, let's be honest, has not been on top for decades, we're very used to new coaches coming in, trying to build the team, and if they don't build it, they get fired. And if they do build it, what do we do with that, or how high can we build it? We're in kind of uncharted territory here. I know Glenn Mason, I guess, would be the longest tenured coach we've had, and if you want to call it modern Gopher football, but Jerry Kill, there was a health situation. Tim Brewster didn't get it done, was shown the door. But you now have PJ Fleck, where he's had some success. Now, there's an argument to be made about, has he had enough success for people to be happy? That
can
depends on who you ask.
Can I give you one stat to continue your point on, and then I'll give it back to you? Yep. PJ Fleck is now 29-29 in the Big Ten in his time at Minnesota. That is the best record a Gopher coach has had since Murray Warmath. Jerry Kill was 7 games under 500 in the Big Ten. Glenn Mason was 17 games under 500 in the Big Ten. But go ahead.
So what I'm driving at is this. This is going to be a disappointing season. I think even if they beat Wisconsin, that's going to heal a lot of wounds. But I think it's still going to be, 6-6, I think it's going to be a disappointment. So the question is, how do we handle this? How does the fan base handle this? How does the coaching staff handle this? The administration? How does it affect recruiting? Because I guess there's a, if you look through the crystal ball, on one hand, you could see doomsday and say, well, we had some good seasons. Maybe it wasn't exactly what we wanted it to be. And now here we go. We're on the slide. Or you could look at this and compare it to something like what Iowa, who's had the same coaching staff for a million years, and say, they've had down years. I mean, they've had disappointing seasons, and you're going to have that when you have the same coaching, it's the same head coach, at least for a long time at a place like Minnesota. You're not going to go up to 9 wins and keep it at 9 wins. That's not realistic at a place like Minnesota. So the question is, this is a disappointing season. Where is it going to go? We don't know, but how are we going to handle that? That's the question, and that'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, and I think, too, to your point earlier, Ryan, the Gophers started in 2017, 2-7 in Big Ten play, and then 3-6, right? They finished, 5th and 6th in the West, respectively, and they went 7-2, and they've more or less stayed in that kind of top tier. Now, I recognize a lot of people put an asterisk on 2020. They were 3-4 that year, and that was just a crazy year for everyone in general. But the reality is, he is 29-29, and I'm not trying to argue that we shouldn't want better. But you have to pair that with the reality of Purdue has come up a couple of years. But they don't consistently stay up. Northwestern is some of the same as well. Even Illinois. I think the thing that is giving people heartburn is they're seeing the Big Ten West going away, and they're now concerned that ultimately it's going to get worse before it gets better. I don't know. I don't know what to think. I got to give that more thought. I'm not suggesting that we talk about that now. It's a good episode, probably, Ryan, for us in the off season, but the Big Ten is changing, and I'm interested to see how it's going to change. and how PJ and staff can kind of rise to the occasion. Because I just do not see them going Texas A&M and being like, yeah, well, we're going to pay a lot of money just to go away.
It should be fascinating, but we'll have to see how it goes.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, no doubt. Let's catch a quick break, and then we'll get into some Big Ten stuff. Ryan, I went to the Gopher basketball game on Friday night, and I saw a gentleman in the bomber jacket. And let me tell you, it looks great in person. He thanked me for the promo code for GG23, and he was able to save on his very first purchase there to home field. And I'm going to tell you, man, it really is a really good looking jacket.
Well, the nice part is with the holidays around the corner and Black Friday also coming up here very, very shortly, I think you're going to want to go give some Gopher apparel to the Gopher fan in your life. And what you got to do, go to homefieldapparel.com, look through the schools, you choose Minnesota, or if you got another college fan in your life, it's great retro things, unique items that you're not going to find anywhere else, stuff that your wives will steal because they're so comfortable. And when you get to checkout, use promo code GG23 for 15% off your first order. That's homefieldapparel.com. And when you get to checkout, promo code GG23 for 15% off your first order.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about the Big Ten games that were on the 11th of November. Probably to start, let's start with the big game. Michigan beats number 10 Penn State. They were without, obviously, head coach Jim Harbaugh. They win 24-15 in what was really a very good, sound football game. If you're like me, you see also probably the highlight for me was the 340-plus-pound defensive lineman running down the running back to save a touchdown would probably save the game. But in general, Michigan kind of had their way in some manner, shape, or form, ran the ball extremely well, and this was the result. They still find a way to win.
We finally got to see the Michigan explosive running game that everybody's been waiting on all year long to happen with Blake Corum and Donovan Edwards specifically. Specifically with Edwards, he had a couple big runs in that game, but I just, what bothers me about this game isn't that Michigan won, and good for them, and Penn State, we can continue to have the James Franklin conversations about everybody outside of Penn State, or excuse me, Michigan and Ohio State, they beat by double digits, and they're a good team, and now I know that there's some apathy potentially starting in Happy Valley. But the way that Michigan coaches and players acted after the game as if Jim Harbaugh had been I just watched a Minnesota team give up 49 points, and now they're acting like Jim Harbaugh didn't steal signs for multiple years. I just, Derek, you got any thoughts on that game?
Well, okay, and the game in particular, I would just echo, you know, what we see from Michigan in games where they're playing more of a matchup opponent is they don't jump all over them. They tend to come out, they play defense. They kind of see where you're at. They determine what you're going to do on both sides of the ball. And then they generally turn it on in the second half. And that's what I thought we saw on Saturday. So a good contest. I mean, two good football teams. I think ultimately Michigan was able to pull away just because of the talent level. I think Penn State's talented, but this is a historically talented Michigan team. And I think that's why they were able to pull away.
I think to your point though, on the sign stealing / Harbaugh situation, like coaches find any way to try to motivate players. And I think that they've bought into it themselves. They obviously feel persecuted. You know, I think earlier when this whole thing started, I didn't realize to the extent of which Michigan was stealing signs. And I also didn't know that there was a rule. I was always kind of thinking back to like, well, my dad goes and scouts basketball games all the time and watches other teams. Like, what's the big deal? This seems much to do about nothing. But obviously they broke a rule that was in place, whether or not you agree with the rule. They obviously there's sufficient evidence that they broke it. And the reality is like they have to find ways, especially when you're really good, Ryan, to just try to motivate these teams. The game should be enough, but the reality is, you know, these are 18 to 23 year old guys. They often need some sort of motivation. And I think that's part of what we saw. But from the coaches, that was the part to me that was like, really? Come on.
I just can't even with the coaches. Like, with the coaches, I'm like, they can use this as motivation for 18 to 23 year old individuals. And I would do the same thing if I was in their shoes. But I hated that the post game interview with the head coach crying, or the acting head coach crying, dropping F bombs left and right.
Well, dropping F bombs and then but also thank you, Lord Jesus, whatever. And like, then like F bomb.
Spare me with all of it. I want nothing to do with any of that. I think it's incredibly fake. I think the whole thing is just miss me with the Michigan coach's facade. That's the last thing I want to say about it. Miss me with all that.
I think that's fair. And you know, obviously we've talked about PJ and the fact that, you know, he's had some struggles of late, but man, he absolutely dropped the mic at the press conference when asked about the situation and said, I've got 99 problems and that's not one. Oh, that was beautiful.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know, the Star Tribune asked PJ after the final question of his post-game Purdue press conference, and any thoughts about the Michigan situation? And Fleck looks at him and says, I got 99 problems, but that ain't one. Ain't wrong.
That was amazing. You have to find humor in any situation when possible, and he found it. So, okay, let's talk about Ohio State and Michigan State. Ohio State wins 38-3. They actually are able to cover the spread. Shocking. Marvin Harrison is still really good at football. Marvin Harrison Jr. I should be clear.
Well, Marvin Harrison probably is still good at football, if we're going to be honest. But I think his kid might be a little bit better.
Yeah. So on the day, Marvin Harrison Jr., 7 receptions, 149 yards and 2 touchdowns. Kyle McCord ended up 24 of 31 for 335 and 3. Honestly, that might have been the best game he's played thus far this season. Now, Michigan State isn't great, right? But Ohio State was able to take care of business. And again, their defense continues to be seemingly the strength of that team.
Yeah, I think that their defense continued to play the way they have, but the difference here was that the passing offense, I think they had more success there, relied on it more, whatever you want to say. And I'll just add in Marvin Harrison Jr. I think you're at a point, and looking ahead to next week, you're literally at a point where if you can hold this gentleman to under 150 yards, that's probably a success. That's how good he is. So I think things clicked on both sides of the ball for Ohio State, and this was the outcome.
I'm going to tell you, I probably shouldn't, but I'll say this, a very high likelihood that Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to be on my Heisman Trophy ballot. Everyone knows he's the best player in college football, potentially. Everybody knows you have to stop him, and all he does every single week is continue to put up numbers. He scored a touchdown in 6 straight games. He scored multiple touchdowns in his last 3 games. He shows up in big games. I don't know, boys. We're recording this on Sunday morning. The line for the Minnesota versus Ohio State game isn't out yet. What do you think is reasonable? 41?
My guess is it'll be like high 20s or low 30s.
I will take that every Luke, please.
You think it'll be 40? I don't know.
I think it'll be 40.
We'll see. Iowa wins 22-0. Rutgers continues to struggle in Kinnick. They aren't able to score a single point. Iowa was an offensive juggernaut this weekend with 402 yards, 50% on third downs. The 179 yards rushing. Didn't see this coming, guys, other than Gavin Wimsett really struggled, 7 for 18 for 93 yards. And then Rutgers just in general struggled just to move the ball at all. Iowa, all joking aside about their offense, their defense continues. And again, their special teams continue to be elite. And this is what wins them football games.
This was one of the best performances, and I'm not here to tell you Kirk Shiroka's offense at Rutgers is much, but anytime you can get a shutout in a Big Ten game, it's really tough to do. And Phil Parker just continues to chug along. You had three different Iowa tailbacks with, I think, double-digit carries. You had Brian Ferentz get over 400 yards. So Iowa's just – I believe Iowa just has to beat one of the final two two opponents to clinch this thing outright. I think they clinched it yesterday when Minnesota lost. But Iowa is going to win 10 games with that abomination of an offense, and that's the way it goes, Derek.
Yeah, I think we'll talk about the Illinois-Indiana game. Some of these games kind of went off script. Not this one. This was classic Iowa. I have to be frank, I didn't get to see much of it, but they stayed on Iowa's going to Iowa. They stayed on script. They get better in November. Their defense gets better. Mm-hmm. More of that in this game. And yeah, I think that if there's any quote unquote surprise, it's that Iowa was able to do as much as they were with their offense, because, you know, Rutgers defense has been pretty solid. So I think a full, a complete game out of Iowa, and, you know, being that we're heading into mid-November, I'm not shocked.
All right, let's get to that Indiana and Illinois game. The Illinois wins 48-45 in double overtime. I think more important to this, though, is that both Indiana and Illinois covered the over-under on their own, which was just hilarious. Nobody saw this game coming. John Paddock throws for over 500 yards. Illinois continues to throw the ball really well, but honestly, fellas, neither team really showed up defensively in any way, shape, or form. And ultimately, Illinois moves to 5-5, 3-4 to make the West all the crazier.
You doubted John Paddock last week when he came in and looked like a reincarnation of Brett Favre.
Yeah, he was great.
500 yards the next week. Like, college football is...
it's undefeated.
I would be very envious to be Jeremy Warner of our Illinois site for the catastrophically entertaining games. And then Illinois continues to come out on the positive side of it. They win a game, fellas, in which they had 14 penalties for 139 yards. Think about that.
Crazy.
A Big Ten game in which, oh, by the way, Derek, 1,100 yards of total offense were accumulated.
You know, I think that two things stand out to me. Luke, you already touched on the play of Paddock coming off of last week. I mean, it didn't, as well as he looked tearing apart the Gophers defense on that final drive, he didn't drop off at all. Indiana's defense has something to do with it, yes. But as we said last week, you still have, even if guys are wide open, you still have to hit them. You've got to hit him in stride. You've got to extend plays, things like that. So he was just, I mean, as sharp as ever. The other thing, I will give huge credit to Illinois, and this is also something we talked about. Illinois is just fine winning games 14-7.
Yeah.
And Illinois is just fine winning games, what was the final, Luke? 45. I guess it was overtime.
45-48. Yeah, 45-48.
Okay, so the final in, I think it was 42 or what a final at end of regulation. So here's a game where Illinois, struggled on defense. Indiana kind of went DGAF on it. Just like, we don't care. We're doing whatever. We're chucking the ball all over the place. And Illinois quickly realized in this game, okay, we're going to have to score 5 touchdowns. We're going to score 6 touchdowns. Mm-hmm. It's just the way it's going to play out today. So credit to them. I mean, they did what was necessary. They actually, I think Indiana scored with 40 some seconds left to send this into overtime. So they had the momentum, and Illinois came back and I think stole it back in overtime. So I give credit to them. They're doing what's necessary. Just, they don't care what the script looks like.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Nebraska loses at home against the Maryland Terrapins, who had dropped, what was that, 3 in a row, I think? Or 4 in a row, sorry. And Nebraska, once again, it has to find a way to win one more to become bowl eligible in the first rule of the Matt, or first year of the Matt Rule era. Again, this was 13-10, and Maryland hits a late field goal. Turnovers again become just it's the story of the season for Nebraska. 5 turnovers on the day. Jeff Sims made his return, having 2 interceptions. Fellas, it's just they, as good as that defense has been, the turnovers have continued to be the one consistent thing for Nebraska.
Nebraska just finds ways to lose, whether it's their previous head coach, whether it's now Matt Rhule. They have turnovers on their final three possessions of the game, including their final drive on third and goal, where just Chuba Purdy, the third quarterback into the game, because Henrik Harbaugh got hurt. Jeff Sims is Jeff Sims, and he can't stop turning the ball over, so they go to Chuba Purdy. And he turns the ball. What a way for Maryland to get off the schneid. Mike Locksley gets to his bowl game, gets bowl eligible, I should say, for a third straight year. But, Derek, this Nebraska team, man, I feel for that defense.
Well, yeah, I was actually surprised for Nebraska. They were able to, I mean, for most of this game, Maryland didn't score at all. I mean, they shut down. Yes. I thought they would shut down Maryland's running game, but the passing game, they shut it down. Leah didn't do much for, again, the bulk of this game. A little more scoring as they got into the second half. But, you know, the turnovers for both teams turned the ball over going in for a score inside the 10-yard line. So, I mean, just back-breaking turnovers on both sides, but obviously ended up hurting Nebraska more. They ended up with five turnovers. And, yeah, I would agree with you, Ryan. They're doing so many things right. And I think they're so much more fundamentally sound than they have been in previous years, but they just haven't, you know, I guess it's cliche to say they haven't learned how to win football games, but maybe that's part of it, is they aren't used to it, and they have to figure out how to make those plays as opposed to having it in their hand and letting it drop.
All right, let's get to this last game. Northwestern moves to 5-5, 3-4 with a 24-10 victory over Wisconsin, who also moves to 5-5, 3-4, the most common record in the Big Ten West. Again, fellas, like, Ben Bryant returns for Northwestern coming off of injury. He has a really solid game, not a like eye popping game, but he's 18 of 26 for 195 yards, two touchdowns. All in all, you know, Tanner Mordecai returns. He was 31 of 45 for 255. But ultimately, you know, they're only able to find the end zone once again, and that's in the fourth quarter. You know, rushing wise, Braylon Allen only 3 carries for 3 yards. I didn't see, did he get hurt in this game?
So he returned, but Luke Fickell said after the game he wasn't himself, so they didn't play him. So sure. Why was he even playing in the first place?
Yeah.
But you're down 21-3, 3 possessions into the game, when you have your starting quarterback return as Tanner Mordecai makes his return, goes 31 of 44 for an empty 255 yards. But Wisconsin just can't run the football, guys. You look at their rushing attempts, 16 running back rushing attempts for about 60 yards against Northwestern. And then you're just getting moved up and down the field on the first three possessions for Northwestern. That's how you lose by 2 touchdowns at home. And then we've seen the comments after the game from Luke Fickell talking about, you know what, we're going to see who wants to be here now. Or Hunter Waller, their star safety, going off and saying, we're soft. We got guys who are soft. I mean, as much as you think it's going well here in Minneapolis, Wisconsin, preseason favorite, 8.5 win total. They're now sitting at 5-5, 3-4. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah.
And they've lost 4 of their last 5 games and now are going to have to do everything they can on senior day to beat Nebraska before they come into the Twin Cities. So it just not the season many were expecting for Wisconsin, Derek, even with Tanner Mordecai and Braylon Allen returning.
Well, yeah, this game, the game script turned upside down on them immediately. Wisconsin's defense looked much like Minnesota's in the first few drives, where Northwestern did whatever they wanted, and running the ball, passing the ball. They just chunk plays up and down the field, as you mentioned, and got out to 21 points almost immediately. And as we touched on previously, I think that the coaching staff for Wisconsin has good passing concepts. I think they know what they're doing. I just don't think they have the personnel to do it. So when the game script turns upside down on you and you're down 3 scores in the first half, you've got to pass the ball, which they tried to, as evidenced by the number of attempts that you talked about, Luke, but it's not clicking. I think it's a personnel issue. I don't think they have enough talent receiving the football to be able to throw it 50 some times a game and put together a dominating win. So yeah, that's how you end up with 3 points is just they're not it's not happening for him on offense.
Yeah, a little surprising, but then again, we talked about it. When you make a philosophical change like they have, it can be pretty challenging. We saw this happen at the University of Minnesota. Now, Fickell is a lot better than Brewster, right? And has a track record. But when you change philosophies, it obviously can have a negative impact for a short period of time. Obviously, they'll have to get the horses in to be able to run the stuff they want to run. But ultimately, they're struggling. And I think that, you know, the mainstream media definitely didn't see this coming. But I think if most people that follow college football real closely knew that they'd probably find success, but not maybe the success that that many anticipated. So in general, very interesting Big Ten West race, obviously. Ultimately, this is Iowa's. They're going to win almost surely. I think Ryan, at the beginning of the season, we both said that Iowa had the best schedule, and ultimately probably find a way. And once again, that they're going to do it.
The more interesting topic to me is, yes, Iowa's going to do it. We all thought that. Is boys, we got five teams in the Big Ten West that are 5-5, 3-4. There's going to be a lot of desperate coaches here in the final 2 weeks of the season to try and find bowl eligibility.
Yes.
It's going to be, I mean, you I think, look at the games this weekend, this upcoming weekend, I should say. I mean, there are going to be some some games on the line, gentlemen, as everybody tries to figure out how can I get to a bowl game in 2023. You got Nebraska at Wisconsin, Purdue at Northwestern, Illinois at Iowa, and then obviously the Gophers play Ohio State. But just everybody's the same in the Big Ten West, Eric.
Yeah, for different reasons, this November it will be compelling. You know, November is always compelling, but that's a good – you bring up a good point. The West seems pretty locked in. Iowa did clinch at least a share. I think crazy stuff has to happen for them to be co-champions. So I think they're going to win it outright, which I don't think was a big – I mean, that would have been my pick at the beginning of the year as well, just given their schedule and, you know, and the fact that they've played well and they've got a history now with this system. But yeah, the other parts for fighting for bowl eligibility is going to be interesting. Obviously, the extra practices become huge with a lot of these teams that are young, and then its impact in recruiting, which Ryan has talked about before. Some of the things in recruiting that people think are a big deal aren't as big a deal. Bowl game is a big deal, at least according to you, Ryan. And so it's important. And yeah, I think desperation is probably the right word for a lot of these coaches.
All right. Yeah. So the Gophers will have two attempts to become bowl eligible on their own. Again, we want to thank all of you for listening. It is frustrating as it is to see a loss like that. It's still really fun to be able to break it down and talk about it. And we appreciate all of you that have listened and gone on this hopefully therapeutic journey with us. Again, thanks for listening, and go Gophers.